Okay. All right, so I'm very pleased to see that JAGS has been mentioned a couple of times already this morning. So I'm going to talk not about JAGS as a whole, but a particular part of it, in particular, looking at generalized linear mixed models. So just a brief slide on what JAGS is. It is a program to do Bayesian inference by Markov chain Monte Carlo, or MCMC. It's available from SourceForge. There are, in fact, several interfaces to R. We've already seen a couple this morning. There are plenty of interfaces in the form of R packages. And like R itself, JAGS has a modular structure. Its capabilities can be extended with dynamically loadable modules, as they're called, which are equivalent to packages. And so today, what I'm going to talk about is the GLM module, which contains improved samplers for generalized and linear mixed models. And mixed isn't in brackets there for a reason that I will explain in a minute. So I hope everybody here does know all about the bugs language, but here's just a quick illustration of what it is. The code is on the left. It looks, it's a declarative language which has an S-like syntax. So if you look at that code, you would say, oh, that's some R code or S code, but it's not. There's no function calls here. What that is a description of the relationships between the nodes on a graph, and the graph is represented on the right-hand side. And what the JAGS interpreter does is it takes that model description along with the data that you provide, and it creates internally a graphical representation of the model, a VGM. So when JAGS is looking at generalized linear models, it's important to realize that it's not working on the left-hand side. It's not working on the syntactic representation of the data. It's working on the right-hand side. It's looking at the graph and trying to find a GLM in the graph. And it's relatively easy to recognize a GLM as a design motif within a graphical model. It's got several layers. So starting at the bottom, we're looking for some individual nodes which have a prior normal or multivariate normal distributions. That is an important restriction I want to relax a little bit later on, but for the moment, it's got to be normal. Then you've got some deterministic relationships which must preserve the linearity of each node with respect to the nodes that we want to sample, the theta nodes at the bottom. Then after that, there are link functions which transform the linear predictors into mean values. And finally, there's the actual outcomes that we want to consider as the outcomes of this GLM. And they must depend on the mean, on the parameters via the mean and not via any other parameter. So there's a factory object that inspects the graph and is able to recognize this as a GLM. Now that brings us to an interesting problem that I found when I first started doing this, which is that normally when we think about mixed models, models that have got both fixed and random effects, we usually think of it in terms of this layered wear notation, where we're saying we've got some fixed effects beta and some random effects b, and b has a prior multivariate normal distribution. And so that's pretty clear in the model definition. And you'll often find that in software, that distinction is built into the syntax of the model description. And what I found was that since JAGS is looking for a GLM in the virtual graphical model, it has to work backwards and try and work out if a parameter is a fixed effect or a random effect. It turns out that that's impossible to do. The distinction between fixed and random effects kind of disappears in the Bayesian framework. I'm not the only person to have realized this. Lots of people have talked about it. And that kind of presented me with a problem, what to do. Well, the solution is very simple, in fact. We do joint updating of everything. So instead of trying to separate fixed and random effects, we're really saying we've got one big design matrix. It's got different parts. And computationally, the only key distinction between the two parts is that the X is dense and Z is sparse. So if you use some sparse matrix algebra routines, then this takes care of that particular problem and allows you to fit generalized linear mixed models with hundreds or even thousands of predictors. And I'm using sweet sparse Tim Davis's excellent set of routines. So in terms of actually analyzing these models, lots of people have worked on data augmentation schemes. And the basic idea of these schemes is to make a generalized linear model look like a linear model, because we know how to sample Gaussian linear models. We can sample directly from the posterior distribution. It's the most efficient thing we can do. So the idea is, if we know how to do that, then we can make a GLM look like a normal Gaussian linear model, and we can use exactly the same sampling engine underneath. And that's a very nice bit of code reuse. So really, this has been done for Poisson regression and logistic regression models, which are coincidentally the most common models in epidemiology. I'm working in the field of cancer research myself, so I was very interested in implementing these ideas. So the granddaddy of all these methods is due to Alpert and Chibb. They came up with this idea that if you have a probit regression model with a binary outcome, you can represent it in terms of a latent Gaussian variable and pretend that what you're actually observing is just an indicator of whether that latent variable is above zero or less than zero. And of course, then you've created a latent Gaussian variable that you can feed to your linear model. This was extended slightly about 13 years later by Holmes and Held, extended it properly to logistic regression. Alpert and Chibb came up with an approximation, but it was just an approximation. In a logistic model, you can have the same data augmentation scheme, except now your latent variable is logistic. And what Holmes and Held did is they realized, or they found, that a logistic distribution is a scale mixture of normals. We've talked about scale mixtures already this morning. And the scale parameter has a Kolmogorov-Smirnov distribution, and that gives you a normal distribution. So what Holmes and Held did is they added an extra parameter, which I've called psi here, which indexes which normal approximation you're using. Now, a rather different approach was taken by Sylvia Fruviat-Schnatter, which models Poisson and logistic regression in terms of latent variables with a negative log gamma distribution. And she approximated these by finite normal mixtures. And as a lot of work has gone on there, and it was extended by Agnes Fussell. And I forgot to mention on the previous slides, but a lot of this stuff is implemented in R. The Binome Logic package implements some of this stuff. So putting all these things together, they all have a very common graphical representation. Is there a pointer? Chris, you were using a pointer. Can I just? They're all using this common graphical representation, and the idea of implementing this in JAGS is to make sure that the user doesn't have to worry about this. They just have to define the model, and JAGS will do this part, this data augmentation, in the background. So there's a class called the outcome class, which encapsulates all of this, does the necessary data augmentation, and then presents itself to the sampling engine as a linear model. Which is quite nice. So we can fit all of these things in the same computational framework. However, a downside of doing data augmentation is it's not always very efficient. So when you see this motif, this design motif, where each latent variable has a single descendant here in the graph, a single child node, but they're all depending on a common parameter, you often find that you get very poor mixing. Exactly the same data augmentation scheme is used in mixture models, for example, and it's well known that they don't mix very well. It's basically because when you're updating this parameter, it depends very much on these, and when you're updating these parameters, they depend very much on this. So there's a kind of high correlation between the two. So another thing that Holmes and Held did is they came up with an improved sampler for use in these data augmentation schemes. And I'm really paraphrasing what they came up with. I guess they didn't really describe it in these terms themselves. But basically, the idea is that you sample theta multiple times. So we sample it once, and then we update Z1. We sample this again, we update Z2, and so on, all the way through to sampling it n times by the time we've updated the last latent variable. So they didn't exactly describe it in their terms, but in those terms, that's what it amounts to. Which does raise a question, isn't this expensive, computationally expensive? Yes, it is. However, important thing to remember is that we only need to sample the linear predictor, which is a scalar. As I mentioned, our vector predictors might have hundreds or even thousands of effects in it. where we don't have to sample a high dimensional distribution, we only have to sample the linear predictor. And they came up with a very efficient scheme for binary logit and probit models as well. However, I've tried extending this to the general scheme. I don't think it's going to work well, but maybe, I mean, in a year or two, I'll be able to tell you whether this works or not. In general, if you do this, you have to do a low-rank update and downdate of the Cholesky decomposition of the precision matrix. And I think that's just going to be too expensive. So I haven't even implemented that yet, but I need to do it just to make sure if it's going to work. Now, yet another scheme, which was introduced about 4 years ago by Paulson, Scott, and Windell, is quite remarkable because it really doesn't have anything to do with the other schemes. It's really approximating the likelihood. So this is the likelihood you get from a logistic a model, like a binomial or a negative binomial. And although that's rather hard to read, basically what it's saying is that you can represent that as a scale mixture, a Gaussian scale mixture where the scaling parameter has a Polya gamma distribution. And they've implemented this in the Bayes logit package, so you can have a look at that yourself. 4 minutes? Yeah. And unlike the other schemes, this one misses out the latent Z value. So that's very interesting because it means that you get extremely efficient sampling without having to sample the latent variables. So I added this to the GLM module, and I'd already written the framework for this, so I added another outcome class, and I managed to implement it in about 300 lines of code, which I think is not bad, and it shows the extent to which the system can be extended. So this is an example of this, the sampler in action. This is the current version of JAGS where it's not implemented, and this is the development version where it is implemented. These are just trace plots. As you can see on the left, that's not very good. You really don't want to see that after 1,000 iterations. You've really not got very good mixing there at all. You can quantify that in terms of the effective sample size, which is only of the order of 54, which is rubbish. So you really don't want to do that. So there's the improved sampler, which has an effective sample size of 650, which is it's not great, but it's not that. It's a huge improvement. The downside of this is it's actually much slower. So even though we've improved the effective sample size by a factor of 10, it's 20 times slower. So, you know, that doesn't really work very well. But do not despair, because Paulson, Scott, and Windell went on to do some further work, which I've not yet implemented, which will allow me to do a 3 to 5-fold speed up on this. And so in the end, we win. But it does illustrate an interesting point. When you're writing MCMC algorithms, there's always a conflict between doing more work and getting a good sampler, or doing it really fast and getting a sampler that's perhaps not very good. And the compromise isn't necessarily very easy to judge, especially when you're writing a very general purpose system like JAGS. So finally, this is all work in progress, of course. And other things I really want to work on are better priors and samplers for variance components, because it doesn't matter how well your effects are mixing. If your variance components aren't mixing well, then you're still in trouble. And I'd also like to extend it again, relax this restriction on having normal priors to having things that can be represented as scale mixtures of normals. So looking at Laplace or logistic priors as well, and that will be nice because it will extend this machinery to some penalized or regularized regression models. And that's it.
Questions for Martin. We actually need to stall for a couple minutes to get back on track, or for Chris. I already said I'm not answering any questions. Yes.
Yeah, so some of these approximations are exact, but the one that really doesn't do well is the finite mixture approximation. If you can imagine, you're way out in the tails here. You're really depending on the accuracy of that last one here. So that is a problem. In order to overcome that properly, you'd have to put a Metropolis-Hastings acceptance step in, except that turns out to be really expensive. So I'm hoping basically to phase out the finite mixture approximations. The other ones are exact, so you don't have to worry about the tails. Yeah. Good question, though.
No. You're not using the same machinery.
No, it's exactly the same machinery. The point is that the outcome class encapsulates all of this. Okay, so all we have is another outcome class that encapsulated in the same way. It just doesn't have the latent Z, so it fitted into the same, exactly the same machinery, as I say, which was nice. It meant I didn't have to rewrite things.
Yeah, that's part of the whole goal is that users could come along and build an algorithm that uses our system and has our package as a dependent. We haven't fully experimented with that, but that should will be
you
possible.
Have to save the C++ code.
No, we're programmatically generating that on the fly, so that shouldn't be a problem.
But then the user would be.
Oh yeah, the user definitely needs a compiler on their system.
But if you save the code.
Then we need to be building binaries for different operating systems. And we really do need to be checked. Because we're allowing people to program basically an arbitrary algorithm or an arbitrary mathematical routine, and the whole goal is to then to allow a user to write whatever they want. So therefore we need to generate C++ of course. But I don't think having the compiler is really a big deal. Yeah, we can talk about it.
All right, so let's thank Martin again.